Lawmakers in D.C. plan to vote this weekend on military aid to Ukraine and Israel. The issue has split some Republicans in Congress, and it could endanger the GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson.
Meanwhile, the Biden administration says it was not involved in Israel's attack on Iran earlier today. State media is reporting that Iran's air defense system shot down three drones over the city of Isfahan. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Italy for a Group of Seven meeting and spoke at a news conference.
The United States has not been involved in any offensive operations. What we're focused on, what the G7 is focused on, and again, it's reflected in our statement and in our conversation, is our work to de-escalate tensions.
Let's bring in our weekly political roundtable. Rick Klein is political director at ABC News, and Francesca Chambers is White House correspondent for USA Today. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having
us.
Francesca, let's start with you. This is the third airstrike exchanged between Iran and Israel in recent days. A senior U.S. official said Israel notified the U.S. before last night's attack. So what do you make of this response, Francesca, from Secretary of State Antony Blinken?
Well, it's quite interesting. Last night when we were reporting on this, just how little information we were getting from both U.S. officials as well as the Israelis. And you've seen in the aftermath of this, you haven't necessarily seen the response from Iran publicly that you might expect in this situation. And so if you just take a step back, it seems right now that both when it comes from the U.S. side and internationally, there is a focus on trying to de-escalate the situation. You hear even from allies of Iran, such as Iraq, which is also a U.S. ally, earlier this week, that they too are trying to play a constructive role in this. And so these countries in the region in particular are very concerned about this spiraling into a wider war that sucks their countries in deeper as well.
Yeah, and Rick, let me ask you about it. It is being kind of discussed now in many quarters as efforts to try to de-escalate things. The U.S. Has issued sanctions, new sanctions on Iran, its officials, its drone program. But yesterday on our show, longtime Iran watcher Robin Wright said, in reality, Washington sanctions have limited leverage on Tehran. And she said, Iran and Israel both have their most extreme governments in decades. So how much can the White House really do to calm things down?
I think the most powerful thing to happen in this latest round was so far the U.S. assistance in defending Israel, because I think it showed to the Iranians the potential futility of a military conflict. And it does appear, to Francesca's point, that both sides are doing what they can to kind of minimize what this is, that this was not as bad, even in the retaliation by Israel wasn't as bad as some people thought it would be. And Iran seems right now, at least rhetorically, to be signaling that it wants to calm things down. As Biden is purported to have told Prime Minister Netanyahu, take the win here and walk away.
Yeah.
That's not what the Israelis did, but they are, it does seem like there isn't a lot of people that want to move in the same direction of making this worse before it gets better.
So, Francesca, there are now three foreign aid bills up for votes, separately giving military and other help to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. Some Republican lawmakers oppose the aid to Ukraine. They say the U.S. needs more money to secure its borders. Here is Speaker Mike Johnson speaking on CNN yesterday.
By definition, we won't get everything we want, but we got a great product here at the end, much better than the alternative that came in the Senate supplemental. And now everybody gets to vote their conscience, up or down. That's what we're for, regular process, regular order, and accountability to the people. And I think you'll see that here this week.
So these three House bills add up to $95 billion. What do you think, Francesca? Will these countries actually get this aid?
Well, and there's actually a fourth bill that also includes some national security priorities of the House of Representatives as well. So in talking to a GOP aide just earlier today about this, you know, they were feeling very good right now about the fact that they even got through the roll vote. They were very stressed out about even getting to that point, to get to a point where they could vote on these bills. And so even if they do pass tomorrow, and again, Capitol Hill feeling good about that with the help of Democrats to be able to pass these foreign aid bills, the Senate still would need to pass them for them to get to the president's desk to sign them. This is not what the Senate passed previously. And the Senate is due to be on a recess next week that lines up with the Passover holiday. And so the Senate would either have to come back early, or it still could be a week or more before, even if the House passes these, that you could see the allies get the aid and the president sign this.
Yeah. And Rick, I mean, Francesca has laid out the congressional calendar, the congressional timing. Meantime, Ukraine is in this war, right, as this money is stalled for months. And Ukraine is warning it's running out of ammunition, running out of air defenses against Russian missiles and drone attacks. Here in Washington, is the message from Ukraine getting through or no?
Well, I think the most powerful recipient of that message was probably Speaker Johnson, who didn't want to put his whole speakership on the line over a series of foreign aid and military support bills, but has done just that. And I think it's because he got that message. And I think it's because he recognizes that getting around some of the political forces here require a certain degree of creativity. Now, time's going to tell whether he was too cute by half in putting this the way it did. Maybe this is the only way that it could potentially pass. As Francesca said, it still faces a long road from here. But I do think the message has gotten through to the extent that you've got so many Republicans, including Speaker Johnson, who are defying, in essence, former President Trump, who, for all that he's said that he's on the same page as Speaker Johnson, does not like the idea of sending this kind of aid without severe restrictions and more accountability. He has been leading a charge that's been picked up by many MAGA supporters in Congress that say that this Ukraine bill in particular is being shoved down their throats by Republicans.
Well, if I could just add very quickly, Mike Johnson actually did speak on this just a little bit ago today, and he said that it's not that they think that this is quote unquote perfect legislation, but this is what they think can get through. This is the best possible product they feel that they can get under these circumstances.
Speaking of Mike Johnson, though, Francesca, Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is sponsoring a resolution to remove him because of all of this. Is there a real possibility the House would be again without a speaker?
Well, earlier this week, he said that he would not resign, which is something that Thomas Massie, who is now the co-sponsor on this, also called for. He says he will not be leaving. And so he could potentially need some Democratic help in order to be able to keep his job. But the argument he's making is, look, I am just doing my job here and bringing this legislation to the floor.
Yeah. Rick, let's go to the Manhattan news of the week. Former President Trump's historic criminal trial began with jury selection. The case, as we know, is over hush money payments he's accused of making to a former adult film star during the 2016 campaign. 12 jurors have been picked so far. They still need to move on and pick some alternates. Rick, what have we learned so far?
Well, I think the difficulty with which this trial is going to be conducted, the difficult circumstances, I think, are evident. Some of the jurors that have been excused or asked to be excused are worried about the pretrial publicity, the scrutiny that it's getting on them, their ability to be impartial, given these really extraordinary circumstances. We also have a bunch of hearings around whether Trump violated the limited gag order that's in effect over what he can say in terms of the witnesses that are coming about. The fact that the prosecutors won't even say who the first witness is because they're afraid about potential rhetorical attacks from the former president on social media or at his public appearances. This is going to be weird. This is going to be strange. And the individuals involved, the 12 men and women and whatever number of alternates they land with, are going to be under immense scrutiny. Every facial expression in the courtroom by the former president and by people that hold his fate are going to be very closely watched. And it's just hard for me to imagine that even a shorter-end trial goes on without hiccups in terms of who the jurors are, what's said about or not said about some of the witnesses and potential witnesses, and what the former president says outside the courtroom. He's already raising money off of this, of course, and is out there railing against the fact that he has to be in court at all.
Well, speaking of that, he did speak outside of the courthouse yesterday. It is hard to hear him here, but most of his remarks were littered with falsehoods. He blasted the case against him, but let's listen to just a piece of what he said.
I'm supposed to be in New Hampshire. I'm supposed to be in Georgia. I'm supposed to be in North Carolina, South Carolina. I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning, but I've been here all day.
So, Francesca, he's saying he's not able to campaign, basically. Biden has been campaigning in Pennsylvania for 3 days. That's a battleground state. And as Trump said, he's meantime in a courtroom. What is the impact here?
Well, he is actually holding a rally tomorrow, the former president of the United States, in North Carolina. So he's leaning on a weekend rally strategy in which he's campaigning when he doesn't have to be in the courtroom. But it is true that President Biden was able to be out, and he's been making some more cracks. In the past, the Biden campaign has really tried to stay away from talking about Donald Trump's legal troubles. But you actually have heard in recent weeks, as this is playing out nationally, and this is what people are paying attention to, President Biden starting to make it more of a campaign issue by talking about the legal and financial struggles that Donald Trump is having. So one thing I'll be curious to see is how that continues to play out. Does Biden start to lean in a little bit harder to that himself on the campaign trail?
Yeah. Rick, we know that President Biden has been struggling with a certain set of young voters who are disappointed, unhappy with his response to the war in Gaza, his strong support for Israel. The Biden campaign says his strategy on Israel, what he's saying, has shifted, that he's pushed back a little more on the Netanyahu government. Do you think, Rick, this issue will have big election implications?
It's impossible to know, right? We're 6 months away, and the October 7th attacks happened 6 months ago. So, you know, we're sort of a midpoint now. And I think events on the ground and the reality in Israel and Gaza will probably be more important than what people, what voters say during what the primary season that's now coming to a close. But clearly it's an issue, and I think it gets wrapped up with other concerns that the Biden campaign rightfully has around younger voters, voters of color, Muslim American voters. I'm particularly thinking about Michigan, where Bobby Kennedy Jr. just got on the ballot this week, and could be an outlet for a lot of disaffected Democrats. Clearly, there are a lot of challenges that President Biden has. And I think right now his conduct in the Israel-Hamas conflict is probably top of the list. Whether it's still going to be there in a few months, I think, remains to be seen.
That is Rick Klein, political director at ABC News. We've also been speaking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for USA Today. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.